For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. Or in the words of Paul, at present we see indistinctly, as in a mirror, but then face to face. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, a couple of our usual cave dwellers, Mr. Mark Tuttle and Mr. Timothy O'Donnell, and a almost usual, that came out wrong, Dr. Jason Abril.
I'm lost inside the cave. I can't get
right.
out.
Right.
Okay. I have a question. This goes for those in the room and anybody listening. How many of you have a telephone within reach to the point where you don't have to take one step to reach that phone? I'd be willing to bet. In fact, I know the three that I'm sitting here looking at have their phones right there. But I'd be willing to bet that 90% or more of you out there have a phone within easy reach. Guys, are we becoming that addicted to technology?
Well, we'll get to the addiction question in a second, but the prevalence of phones is amazing. You walk into a restaurant and pretty much every table, people have phones on the table, etc. And half the restaurant, you see people, rather than, you know, conversing there over dinner, they're there texting on their phones with their heads down, and you kind of wonder, you know, what happened to the social engagement of the dinner.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we're at a 10-year anniversary of the iPhone, right? And I know I've become quite accustomed, and we'll see if maybe there's a checklist we can go through later about whether or not I'm addicted to it. But I do find it it's indispensable, really, because of the power that it kind of puts in my hands, and then in terms of convenience and functionality. But it pulls, it tugs at me. And just like you said, you know, every time I'm one of those guys, so if I go out or whatever, wherever I'm at, I have, you know, on the table. And then, yeah, after I could engage in conversation for a little bit, but it's not very long before I start wondering what's happening on my phone. You know, are there Facebook updates? Are there, you know, tweets that I need to look at? Emails I need to check, or maybe I want to bank, whatever it is. I mean, there's a lot of fun and interesting things that are available to me at my fingertips, and I'm easily distracted. I know, Dr. Abril, you know, as a bioethicist, I'm sure you've got a few thoughts on kind of the role of technology in our lives.
Well, of course, in medical ethics, we talk all the time about, you know, the wonderful availability of technology, particularly in terms of patient care, keeping people alive. But then there's also the overuse of technology.
Are we
prolonging someone's suffering or dying process? Of course, that's not the type of technology we're necessarily talking about today, but that's certainly one example, something that gets talked about. In fact, there's a great one of the books I assigned to my medical students at Marion is a book called Virtues in Medical Practice by Ed Pellegrino and David Tomasma. And one of the virtues they recommend, particularly for healthcare professionals, is what they call, it's the virtue of temperance, but they specifically talk about what they call therapeutic parsimony, basically the appropriate, moderate use of technology. Because we kind of cyborgify people sometimes in the ICUs.
No,
you brought get hooked up to a lot of stuff when you're sitting in the ICU. You can wake up and go, what?
I've been assimilated.
How much of this stuff is permanent?
Exactly.
Now, you brought up a very bad word in today's society, and that is temperance. Mm-hmm. And I think you're exactly right. That has everything to do, I think, with technology, what could possibly happen, and really honestly how to avoid the bad side of at least the pocket technology that we have, the iPhones and cell phones, etc. So let's talk a little bit about temperance. So temperance is one of the cardinal virtues. And just for our listening audience, let's go over this. What exactly is a virtue?
So a virtue at its most fundamental level is a character trait. It's a disposition. Aristotle also refers to it as a habit. But habit, of course, is a word that we think about, like all the bad habits people have and so on. Of course, overchecking our iPhones might be an example of a bad habit. But it is, I mean, even just that use of it, you think this disposition is like, I'm disposed towards not talking to my partner at dinner, but to checking my phone to see the latest ballgame scores or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's just something you're inclined to do. And we're more and more becoming inclined towards, you know, using technology in place of other things. And I think that's the key point to keep in mind, is that, you know, technology provides wonderful things. You know, Timothy referenced some things that technology gives to us that we didn't have before or makes easier for us. But then it also kind of replaces certain things that we like engaging in conversation. My wife and I, we have this, you know, we'll be sitting at dinner and we'll get on some debate about some topic. And we used to, you know, kind of, well, it seems like this would be the right answer. And this would be, I'm not talking about philosophical questions, but just like something mundane. And all of a sudden we realize, well, we can just Google this and find out.
Right. Yeah. Google knows. Oh, yeah. Google will sell it for us.
And so the conversation ends. Yeah. Right? One of us Googles it. All right. Okay, now what we talk about.
Right.
But to go back to, you know, just again, virtue again. So virtues are contrasted with vices. They're both, again, habits or dispositions that sort of become, Aristotle says, second nature to us. So that we're disposed towards acting in certain ways, either that are conducive towards human flourishing, and that's a whole other concept we can unpack, or that detract from it. And those are virtues and vices.
Right. And one of the key components to a virtue is it's something you have to practice over time. Mm-hmm. You're not born with virtues. So, you know, little kids, obviously, the virtue of temperance is not something that's really strong in most four-year-olds. It has to be developed over time. And that's one of the things I think about with the cell phones is, you know, that ability to hold off, that ability not to indulge yourself constantly, that ability to sort of delay gratification, to be able to do what you need to do at the moment, that really you stop practicing that. And, and it goes by the wayside just because you have that phone right there at your fingertips.
I think the demands also it places on us for availability is something that's very, at least over the course of my life, changed a lot. I think a lot of listeners can relate to this. I know as a kid growing up, you know, if it was the weekend, you know, or summer, you know, and, you know, 10 years old, you know, my best friend and I, we would, you know, take off in the morning at, you know, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, and we'd be home, you know, we didn't have watches. So we could, you know, start when you had to be home when the street lights came on. So whatever time that was, you know, because that's when dinner was. My mom and dad had no idea where we were. They had no idea what we were up to. We were out playing army or running through the woods or whatever that is. And today, though, if someone sends you a text message and you don't respond, especially if it's a spouse or a close friend, if you don't respond like within an hour, that their blood pressure starts going. They start to worry and wonder what's going on, or they get angry and they expect me to respond like right away. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also amazed sometimes if I text someone, I try not to have that level of expectation on how fast they respond, but I'll text someone like my sister. And I don't care day or night, she responds like in under 60 seconds. And so I'm like, what? How is she able to, when does she sleep? You know, when does she, she certainly got a certain kind of attachment to her phone, right?
And I think this phenomenon kind of also speaks to some larger related issues or questions. So one thing, first of all, is not only our social relationships, you know, being that constant availability and so on. And again, what does that say about, you know, our need for validation and self-esteem? Not just, again, people responding to texts, but, you know, how many likes do we get on Facebook or Instagram pictures and stuff? So, again, lots of areas we could explore as the show goes on. But also our work life. My wife specifically does not have her work email on her iPhone. Because she's like, well, my employer's not paying for my iPhone, and when I leave the office, they're not paying me to answer emails on my iPhone.
Right.
I'm different. I do have my email on my iPhone, and to me, that actually gives me more flexibility, such that I don't have to physically be in my office in order to do work.
Right,
I could
right.
be at Starbucks or something and still answering emails and doing all sorts of things. So to me, it gives greater flexibility. I can knock out quick emails, even the elevator ride up to my office. So I like having it on my phone. But it is creates that thing where, you know, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, I may have left physically the office, but I'm still on the clock. And that creates its own kind of, you know, I think of Joseph Pieper's Leisure, the Basis of Culture, right? Maybe, you know, I need to get better about at least taking, you know, a Sabbath hour a day,
right,
or
right.
Or the whole Sabbath day to say, no, no emails on Sunday or something like that.
Yeah, and that brings up a whole nother layer of technology, and that is the distortion in the idea of human purposes. What are we created to be? Are we created to be this work animal that's constantly hooked up to the office, constantly available to other people, constantly on the clock? Or do we have a higher purpose? Is our work life for the sake of something else, or vice versa? You know, really, I think technology is turning us more and more to where we are truly for the sake of work rather than for the sake of honoring and loving God.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the ways in which I think I've experienced something that you've just mentioned, Dr. Eberle, is I too like the convenience of mobile devices, of, you know, whether it's the iPad or it's an iPhone or different brand versions of those sorts of things, because like you said, it's the portability of it, so that if I want to stay on top of things or check in, I feel like this thing. The flip side to that, though, also that I've noticed, so I do that. So I find that's a good trade-off for me. But what I also find out is it also, because I'm actually accomplishing more, the technology allows us to be more productive. And that in and of itself creates, sort of attracts more work, because mm-hmm. you can actually get more done. So guess what? They give you more to do.
Right. I find it fascinating.
So you kind of get a new level, right? Everything, right? Because I don't know about you guys, but I get 300 to 500 emails a day.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's just emails. And so just to triage emails, it's not like reading them all. It's like figuring out which ones are important, which ones are not. Which ones, do I have to act on this one? Do I not? Do I need to forward it? Do I actually have to digest this thing in its entirety and really try to comprehend it and then formulate a response? And oh my gosh, I don't think I had a class in that. You can have a whole class just in triaging email. But then if you don't respond to the email fast enough, what happens next? They're either going to instant message you and say, hey, what about my email? Or they're going to text you and ask you about their email.
Right.
The one thing they won't do is pick up the phone.
They won't
and
call you.
Correct. I mean,
right.
I sometimes
those days are over.
I mean, I sometimes forget that that's a function of our iPhones.
Right. That's like, I've got the old man version, right? Because it's the big one. It's the plus size. And sometimes people will say, "Oh boy, that's such a big phone." I'm like, "Yeah, you know what? I hardly ever call on it though, right?" And when I do call, it's now connected to what? The Bluetooth in the car, or I can have a Bluetooth plugged in my ear. Maybe that'll become a permanent implant at some point. We're probably headed there, Dr. Eberle.
Yeah, the Borgification.
Right, exactly. You will be assimilated.
Resistance is futile.
Right, you bet it is. Well, that is very true, because imagine, I mean, we're all of us here, and many of you are listening too, are using technology. So you know what? Speaking of technology, it also presents certain constraints, like time constraints, like we need to take a break.
That's right. And I didn't even have to look at my cell phone to tell that. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more of the Catholic Cave right after this.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV, song lyrics that are questionable or worse. Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest? Or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm still Timothy O'Donnell, and in here we have a full cave with lots of great friends. We have Mark Tuttle, of course, Kent Blanford, our trusty producer and sidekick, and great friend of the show, and actually really a bona fide now cave dweller, Dr. Jason Eberle from Marian University. And we're talking about technology, its pluses and minuses, and actually we're going to now, I think, advance the conversation to look, we need to define temperance? Because there was a recent article that really was the catalyst for us wanting to have a program on this specific topic. Dr. Eberle, tell us a little bit about this article that we ran across by a good friend and colleague of yours.
Yeah, Christopher Tollefson, he's a professor of philosophy at the University of South Carolina, writes a lot in Catholic ethics, bioethics, philosophy in general. And he's also a fellow of the Witherspoon Institute, which is associated with Princeton University and is a sort of think tank for the values and principles in American institutions. And they have a sort of blog series called Public Discourse.
I love that. Yeah. I read that every day.
Yeah, that's on the daily blog roll. Mm-hmm. It definitely is.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he recently published this article there that you, Timothy, found and brought to our attention about basically reviewing a new book published from a particularly Christian perspective about our technological addiction and sort of, again, the need for temperance and so on in that realm. And in sort of going through his review of the book and recommending it, Professor Tollefson kind of talked about different virtues we need to cultivate. And in the last segment, we talked a little bit about the basis of what a virtue is and with respect to technology, particularly, yeah, temperance or moderation as a necessary virtue, which, again, as Mark mentioned in the last segment, it's a cardinal virtue, meaning it's a hinge virtue upon which all the other virtues hang. There's four cardinal virtues: courage, justice, temperance, and
prudence.
Thank you.
No, I can only get three or four out at myself at any given moment. I don't know why. One of them always like hangs back.
and as well as in cultivating the virtue, there's only three you can get right.
There's right at any given moment, right? Well, the power to understand the virtues too, what's helpful sometimes I think is, you know, I think it was Aristotle said, you know, these are sort of, they're not midpoints, but they do lie in between extremes. Mm-hmm. So temperance, where would you say, what are the extremes? So temperance would be the right kind of habit of a kind of moderation. But what would be the two extremes that where you would be veering off course relative to temperance?
So in broad terms, for any virtue, the extremes are excess and deficiency. And so to use a classic example of temperance or moderation in action, think of the temperance movement back in the 19th century.
Oh, sure, yeah.
With respect to alcohol. And of course, there's, you know, lots of reasons for people to, you know, have to, for medical reasons or for other reasons, to refrain completely from alcohol. But Catholics, unlike some of our Christian brethren, as a rule, do not forbid alcohol.
Right.
Of course, we use alcohol in the Mass as the foundation for the
wedding feast of Cana. That's the one I always throw back at them.
Right. I always
seems like Jesus was okay with it.
You know, when you take a look at it, I mean, Jesus' first miracle was just to keep the party going.
There we go.
Excellent.
Well, yeah.
But so the point is that if one is kind of, you know, a bit too, let's say, prudish in that sense, mm-hmm. a bit too not allowing themselves, again, not just about alcohol specifically, but just
Of stinginess.
Yeah, joie de vivre, right? No joy of life, because
right.
Which again, not alcohol can bring, but other things can bring as well. And so God calls us to enjoy life, and has provided fruits for us to enjoy. But then, of course, there's the excess.
Right.
And overindulgence and so on. And, you know,
drunkenness would be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, drunkenness itself, it's worth noting this context, is a sin. I mean, obviously, drunkenness can lead to all sorts of other sins, illicit sexual behavior.
Because you've disabled your
reasoning faculty.
Right, exactly. But all sorts of things that were impermissible all of a sudden sound like a good idea.
You know what is even fascinating about the sin of drunkenness is Thomas Aquinas breaks it down almost into two sins. So on the one hand, you have a sin against reason. So if you're out getting drunk just for the sake of forgetting about stuff, you know, losing your sense of reason, you're just going to drink till you're silly. That, you know, that's a mortal sin, and it's a sin against reason. On the other hand, if you are out and you just have a few too many and you wind up accidentally getting drunk, that's a sin against temperance. Mm-hmm. And he says that's a venial sin, mm-hmm. you know, and it's interesting that, you know, you've kind of got two sins, although the same mm-hmm. same sort of result.
Mm-hmm. So to relate this back to our question about technology then, so again, the moderate use of technology. So, for example, there are people who, you know, the term is used Luddites, right?
Yeah,
people who
right.
completely reject technology. I actually had a former colleague, he was an adjunct faculty member at IEPUI when I first started there. And we had this online course management system. They switched it out, but back then it was called OnCourse. And they moved to a system where the registrar required you to submit all your final grades electronically through OnCourse. You couldn't use a paper form anymore.
Right.
And he quit. He stopped being.
Oh, that was it.
Because he had a philosophical objection. He'd read too much Heidegger, and he had a.
I knew Heidegger was going to show up in the show today. I knew it.
No, but here's the thing with Heidegger.
But I thought it would have been Mark.
when you read Heidegger, you have to exercise moderation. I think that's
right.
Exactly
right. Oh, Lord.
That's with all German Good philosophers. Lord.
Right.
Right. Yeah. It's like castor oil, just one spoonful at a time.
So this is someone who, you know, respecting his perspective, but nevertheless, I would say, or, you know, let's say Aristotle, if he were around, would say, listen, you're missing the boat. There are some actual advantages to technology to allow things to happen faster and so
right,
on.
Right.
Again, there's good things about being more productive.
Right.
But when we get trapped in that mindset of we have to be producing, and always using technology to be able to produce more, then it becomes excessive.
What would you make of the phenomenon of, say, binge watching? Because that's only possible because of technology, right?
That's true.
You can't binge watch a sunset.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's kind of interesting. I think we may have touched on this in a previous show.
Because I've done it. I've done it.
It's confession.
No.
I just kind of want to know where I stand. Yeah. I know this is philosophy, not theology, but I still want your take.
Tim's deep, dark secrets.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
The confessional light is on.
Yeah.
But, binge watching is interesting because on the one hand, I was thinking about this a while back. So certain TV shows that I watch, you can't binge watch because they still come out, you know, one new episode every week.
The Strain just started.
Oh,
season
right.
four.
Yeah.
You can only watch one episode.
Or Game of Thrones, they just premiered on a new season on HBO, okay, and okay. Same thing. And so it premieres, and here's the thing, you have a week to absorb it and to talk about the water cooler conversations we used to talk about, right?
Yeah.
And no, and so whether through social media or actually in person, you talk about what's going to happen and fan theories and all sorts of things. Whereas when you've been watching like one of those Netflix series where it comes out, you watch all 10 episodes at once, then it's like, okay, we can talk about the whole season, but it's like a one shot.
Right.
Yeah. Whereas you can stretch out the experience and again, more socialize it, I think.
Right. And also too, when you binge watch, let's say it's 10 episodes and let's say they're an hour-ish, you know, 50 minutes to an hour. You know what? All of a sudden though, when that show hits and you decide to do that, that's kind of a whole day's worth of other things. Like you said, technology, it's going to then displace, right? Because you kind of clear the calendar, right? I mean, right. None of us leave lives where just like, you know, I had nothing at all planned Saturday, right? No. There's stuff going on all the time for us, or either of our own making or those significant others in our lives are making plans for us, you know, and including us on that or kids and stuff. So all of a sudden there's this whole, and then there's the, well, you might stay up late at night. You might stay up all night because you're just like, I know I've felt that where I watch one episode. I know, so I'll start episode one. I know all 10 are available. I'm like, oh, I can't watch. I don't have 10 hours. But I'm just going to watch one, and then at the end of one, there's a cliffhanger, right? And I'm like, all right, well, I'll just start the next one. Mm-hmm. And then next, you know, I'm like, I was just doing this with Walking Dead last night, by the way.
Oh.
So I just – so I intended to watch only one, and I wound up watching 2.5. And the only reason I stopped is I fell asleep. It wasn't like I willed myself. It wasn't like I disciplined myself and cut myself off. No, I literally gave out.
Now, all of us when we were kids, we had the similar experience with books and novels. You know, mm-hmm. you're reading a book, you get mm-hmm. to the end of the chapter, there's a cliffhanger, you got to read the next chapter, and yes. the next thing you know, it's midnight or 1 a.m. and
you're
and
under the blankets with the flashlight.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But there's a difference.
But now you're under the blanket yeah. with a Kindle.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah,
streaming, like, streaming, not
streaming,
reading.
Right, streaming, not reading. But no, there's a difference between binge watching a TV show and getting caught up in a novel. And so I'm curious.
Let's especially a good novel.
Right, right. So I'm curious about the effect of technology when you look at the idea of taking a story and presenting it visually through the medium of a television show, particularly when it's a serialized type of thing like that you can binge watch.
Well, of course, you know, a fundamental difference between the book medium and the television medium is that how it impacts the imagination. You know, the imagination is one of our core faculties of the mind that, I mean, we just need to be able to perceive anything. But then, of course, to be able to create. And I think that's maybe something that might be getting, you know, harmed at a collective level is our ability to think creatively, to be active with our intellects.
Right.
As opposed to being passive recipients. And, of course, I mean, as we've talked about on the show, you know, television, films provide all sorts of wonderful ways for us to think philosophically and reflect on various things. So it's not completely a passive experience. But again, just the very medium of a book. Yeah. You know, one of my favorite things to do when I'm reading a book, actually, and this might be crossing the lines, is to imagine, like, if it's a, you know, a fictional novel, who would be what actor would portray this character?
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, when you wind up with a serialized type of thing, you lose that ability even to reflect. So, you know, as you were saying, you know, your ability to go back, have that water cooler conversation allows you from a distance from the show to use your imagination mm-hmm. to recreate it and to play that series of what ifs and to talk about the different characters and what their lives outside the television show might be like. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the only thing you know about a character, whether it's in a book or a TV show, is what's presented to you, and your imagination has to fill in everything else. So, you know, that active intellectual experience of watching a TV show, when you binge watch and you serialize it, you lose even that ability to kind of engage with your intellect.
Yeah, we need to take a break right now. So everyone, during these spots, imagine what's coming next. And we'll be right back with more of The Cave right after this.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell, Dr. Jason Eberl. We've got a full cave today, and we are talking about technology. So we've been talking about how technology in some ways leads us away from the path of virtue, particularly the virtue of temperance. So always being at somebody else's beck and call, always having the world at our beck and call and at our fingertips, technology allows us to kind of lose that ability to put things off, to exercise moderation in the way we approach the world. But that's not necessarily the only detrimental side to technology by any stretch. And I think as Catholics, I think there's some particular dangers that we have to watch so that we're kind of guarding our spiritual life in the midst of this technological world that we're immersed in.
Yeah, so again, then the article I referenced in the last segment by Professor Christopher Tollefson, published on Public Discourse, he talks about several virtues that or vices that might be cultivated by technology. So one thing, for example, is narcissism. Mark, you mentioned that during one of the breaks. The need to, you know, have pictures of me, not me personally, but I'm usually the one taking the picture. Like, I don't want to be in the picture. But, you know, you got to have your Facebook profile pic, and, you know, you have people have their Instagram accounts and all sorts of things. And even if you're putting not a picture of yourself, but just of whatever, something you like, you know, how many likes does it get, right? And you're looking for that little, you know, red number on the icon to tell you, ooh, I got notifications and so on. And we realize how much we kind of, you know, want those and are yearning for those, that validation. Another sort of dark side to technology, I think, particularly in our political discourse, is the harm that's done through the sort of anonymity of the blogosphere. And you see an article posted, say, on the IndyStar website, and then you read the comments section.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I'm not recommending that you do.
But it's not for the faint of heart.
It
often.
It is not for the faint of heart. And, when you kind of wonder about, how can the world be such as it is, and you read some of those comment sections on that or other news, and you're like, oh, this is why.
Right.
But there's something, again, about that anonymity that people feel they can lash out in ways they would never do in person. Right. Again, hypothetically, I might say something about Mark online where I could never say to his face sitting here across the table. Right. That's just rude. But for some reason, it's not rude. And everybody's opinion counts. Right. Of course, Socrates had a big thing about the difference between knowledge and wisdom and mere opinion and belief.
Right.
So that's something that, again, as philosophers, we're always kind of mindful of. Is the mere expression of unsubstantiated opinion and so on in the blogosphere, which then kind of creates this, again, we talk about going viral, this virus of mere opinion that's creating this shadow world of information.
And it gets back to the idea of purposes. The purpose of an exchange on the internet tends to be self-expression. It tends to be so.
And self-assertion.
And self-assertion. Mm-hmm. So I get my opinion out there. That's the most important thing.
Assert this.
Where the purpose of a conversation is to get to some semblance of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
If we sat down and I've got a rule for myself that I don't talk politics on Facebook, etc., just because it's not a medium that's conducive to it. Mm-hmm. You can't get to any back and forth line of questioning that leads you anywhere. It's merely just assertion and putting out opinions, and therefore, having to shut down somebody else's wrong opinion in the most brutal fashion you can imagine. It's much more conducive to sit down one-on-one over a cup of coffee and then talk about politics. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are productive political discussions. I actually learn things. My political opinions tend to move around a little bit, and I come to a better understanding of what's going on by sitting down having a conversation with somebody I respect over a cup of coffee. Whereas even if I were engaging with that same person on Facebook, it wouldn't be the same thing. It would be just a mere exchange of shots back and forth in the comment section.
Mark, I can always tell when you've been reading Kant. Because your opinion moves around. Or Heidegger. I agree with you. It's like a wet noodle, right? When you're trying to argue with someone, trying to get a hand on a wet noodle when you're trying to argue with someone on Facebook, having a Facebook, we're going Facebook wars, mm-hmm, right? And they're wars because there's real human collateral. I think we lose sight of, too, from a Catholic perspective. It's not good for our souls to be lashing out. We're in a medium that allows one, it happens frequently, right, Dr. Ebel, lash out with these ad hominem, nasty, vulgar comments. It's not good. It's obviously, not a lot of fun to be the recipient of those comments, but it's also, it's probably worse to be the one who's generating those comments in terms of one's soul to be lashing out like that. I did want to mention, because we brought the article up a few times, it is available on Public Discourse, and it's called Our Addiction to Technology, Resistance Must Begin in the Home, and that's by Christopher Tolson. And the book he's talking about is by Andy Crouch. And that book, it's kind of a review of that book. And that book, if anyone wants to pick it up, is called The Tech Wise Family. And like so many other shows that we've talked about here in the Catholic Cave, how important and central that our family life is to the proper formation and education of children, such that it begins at home, right? Mm-hmm. That's sort of a microcosm of the church, right, is the home. So these are really great resources for us to have. And, boy, technology isn't we're not going to be able to be Luddites anytime soon, I don't think, even if that were our desire. I think it's a bad idea anyway. Right. But
yeah, the central role of the family within society, I think, yeah, technology is a huge threat to that, just because that's where culture begins. Mm-hmm. And so those conversations over the dinner table, that's how you learn how to discuss without resorting to ad hominem attacks. You know, your care and concern for other people, your ability to put your own needs aside for the needs of somebody else, all of that happens naturally through your interactions within a family. And when you have an overabundance of technology and you have issues of technology addiction that are interfering within family life, that culture disappears quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think about the rapid expanse to, again, over the last, you know, at least during my lifetime, of the content that's available. So we have technology. In one sense, we've been talking about, like, I've been thinking at least about devices, like 10-year anniversary of the iPhone, there's iPads and all of the kind of related, similar type thing. But I also think the content is huge. I remember as a kid growing up, you know, we had, there was a limited access, right? There were two TVs in the house. There was one in the family room, and that was the color one. And my parents, which you could never use because they had one in their bedroom, and it was a black and white. And so, but I just remember because—
You had four channels.
Yeah, well, that was it, right? There were four channels, and maybe, I grew up in the Chicagoland area. I think WGN might have been new, so that might have been kind of added. But also, quite frankly, there wasn't enough on TV to hold my interest anyway. A lot of this program, there were soap operas, and there were news shows, and there were some stuff. There was like Johnny Sacco and the Flying Robot. I liked that. There were a few shows for kids, but generally speaking, there was not a lot of content. So even if I, you know, wanted to, you know, spend all day in front of the television, there just was not that much. But that's not the case now. There's something for all ages. There's plenty of content that's been developed to keep us perpetually amused. And I want us to talk a little bit about that. I mean, it seems like as part of our human nature, we have this proclivity for amusement. And again, maybe it's a violation of temperance, but it seems like that's also can be what? A way in which we can be controlled by others, right? This sort of, we can, I go back to like the Roman Empire, right? That, how did they pacify the masses? Well, bread and circuses, right? And that's pointing at what? Well, keep their bellies full with bread. So they're, you know, famine often sparks revolution. So, you know, let's keep them fed and then keep them entertained. And then as long as they have a sufficient amount of violent entertainment, as it would then, that would also sort of satiate them as well, and they'd be pacified. So are we sort of pacifying ourselves? Is that part of what might be sort of the dark side of this technology, do you think, Dr. Eberle? There's that book. It's called Amusing Ourselves to Death, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what's happening?
Well, you know, this reminds me of, you know, one of my favorite books. I know I mentioned on the show before, the German Catholic philosopher Joseph Pieper's Leisure, The Basis of Culture. And in that book, as he defines leisure in what we philosophers would call the eudaimonistic sense, the Aristotelian sense of what conduces to authentic human flourishing. And again, it's not about unplugging and just, again, vegetating, you know, couch potatoing and so on. I mean,
right.
our bodies need that rest and recharge. But again, when you talk about just this passive absorption of mere content, mm-hmm. that's entertaining, that's amusing. But again, that doesn't engage the intellect. That doesn't cause you to think. That doesn't spark conversation. Actually, my family and I right now, my daughter's home from college for the summer and everything. And one of the things we're doing is we've been watching the O.J. Simpson documentary. Not the HBO one that had John Travolta and stuff, but the actual, it's a 10 or 8 hour long documentary.
Wow.
That goes step by step through his whole life and through and everything. And it's fascinating because it talks about, you know, race relations in Los Angeles and LAPD and their relation to the African-American community and how that all relates to the OJ trial. And my wife lived in Los Angeles when the Rodney King riots happened.
Oh,
so
wow. Yeah.
It's, like I said, I think it's like an 8 hour long documentary. It's taking us, you know, days and days to go through it because we keep pausing. Like every 15 minutes, we're like pause, and there's like something we want to talk about, you know? And my daughter has all these questions and my wife has these stories to share. And, you know, it's a very engaged type of communal watching. So again, here's something where technology, has provided a mechanism for family engagement and discussion about deep issues and so on. On the other hand, you have to watch that type of programming as opposed to just binge watching The Simpsons, which, you know, I love The Simpsons too.
Right, but. Right. It's a different kind of watching, yeah. Right?
You know, the phrase that comes to mind is from St. Thomas Aquinas, and that is that grace builds upon nature. And I think, you know, when you look at technology, the good use of technology is similar. It has to build upon nature. It has to build upon what is naturally good for us and what's naturally conducive to us, rather than us trying to, I think, turn that around and have our human nature somehow trying to enhance the technology and the technology. That's when it gets disordered. That's when it gets backwards. But, you know, your experience with your daughter of sitting down and watching this documentary and pausing and discussing it and it being conducive to conversation, that's because you and your family had developed a habit of having these types of discussions to begin with. So you already had that virtue built in, and then the technology only allows you to kind of expand that and practice that and do that at a higher level. Whereas, you know, if you didn't have that already built into your family life, that's when I think the technology can be erosive and it can actually lead, you know, you several steps backwards in your cultivation of proper leisure within your family.
We are once again up against the clock. We need to take a short break here. We'll be right back with more of the Catholic Cave right after this.
Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Welcome back once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell. We have in the studio Dr. Jason Eberl. Are you a guest or are you a
That probationary period is over. He's a full-fledged member. Give him the cut.
I'm the one who's holding the cutout that's casting the shadows on the wall.
Right.
Well, we are spending the day talking about technology, talking about sort of the threats the technology poses, in particular the communication technology. You know, this is the 10th anniversary of the iPhone, the iPad, and so we're talking about how that has in some ways caused challenges, etc. And, you know, the Holy Father came out with his encyclical Laudato Si, and he addresses technology and kind of some of the threats that presents to us as Catholics.
Yeah, you know, in the last segment, Mark, you talked about, you know, grace building off of nature, and, you know, and God's grace cooperates with us in our natural condition. Of course, our natural condition is not simply as these isolated human beings separate from the rest of God's creation. We are embedded within it. We emerge out of it, right? Out of the dust we are formed. And so, and the dust we shall return. And so the...
A good reference for Lent.
Exactly. And so we need to kind of conceive of how we develop and use technology, this uniquely, you know, human-made products, in harmony with nature. And again, Pope Francis is not a Luddite, but he does, again, call for moderation. Really, his main concern, and it kind of fits in with that virtue theory, is the mindset. You know, it's not about the technology itself. It is the mindset with which we use technology. And he refers to it as the technocratic paradigm. And so there's social political dimensions to this, as well as moral and spiritual dimensions. And so we kind of need to reflect, he's calling for us in Laudato Si to reflect on this paradigm and what it means. Not only as, obviously, given the major theme of the encyclical, how we relate to the environment as sort of something to use, just as we use technology, but also as opposed to nature being something given to us by our Creator for us to be stewards of. But when it comes to information, he calls to mind the distinction between knowledge and wisdom. Right? Again, as Timothy, you mentioned in a previous segment, there's all this content out there. There's all this data. There's all this stuff. Or you can Google anything. But just because we have access to more data, more information, certainly increases our knowledge to a certain extent. But does it make us more wise users of that knowledge for, you know, good, spiritual and purposes that are conducive to human flourishing. And I guess this kind of then leads us into, you know, this final segment, some of the recommendations for Professor Tolleson for, so practically, what ought we to do?
Right. Well, I think we as Catholics have a lot to offer the world just in terms of this discussion, because we've talked about modern philosophy. We've talked about some of the distortions that the modern philosophy has led us to. And one of them is a real lack of an understanding of the concept of purposes. And where the rubber hits the road with that discussion is when you get to technology. And not only just purposes of nature, which is what the Holy Father was getting at, that we need to take some time to reflect on, you know, what the purpose of nature is, what the nature, the inner nature of nature is, and to what extent we as humans can work in harmony with the created world that God has given us versus trying to impose our own purposes and our own will and our own, you know, I guess, distortions on nature. But also, you know, reflection on human nature. You know, what is it to be truly human? What is the purpose of human life? And, you know, we as Catholics have a tradition of reflecting on those things that I think we can insert into this conversation about technology as it goes on.
One area of technology and content that we didn't really talk about yet that I know is part of one of the recommendations of Professor Tolleson's really is pertains to music. And we've, you know, because I'm such a big consumer of the visual arts, you know, I don't think about music, but boy, you think about the wide range of music that's out there. And I think one of his recommendations, if I'm reading this correctly, really is around this, the importance of a family together, using music, playing music, singing music together in worship can be a kind of corrective to the toxicity that technology may present itself. And I think about some of the, I don't watch them very much anymore, although I watch the highlights of like the music awards and some of that. Yeah, they're distinctly hostile to Catholic morality often, right? I mean, it's quite a, yeah. The Lady Gaga's, see, that's two shows in a row I got right. Lady Gaga on, are examples of things that just, you know, culturally speaking are probably, you know, off the radar for us as Catholics. But there is a whole realm, and I think that's even a sort of a appeal to beauty and aesthetics within what his recommendation.
Right, and part of that recommendation is having to do with the creation and being creative and actually creating the music rather than just being a passive consumer of music and, you know, plugging in the earphones or turning on the TV to...
Wait, are you taking a shot at karaoke machines?
Well, you know, that could be.
Some technology is intrinsically evil.
Right. Or the users make it so. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a family activity that I think very much is lost in the modern world of families getting together to create together.
That is something.
Maybe music is not your family's thing, but you know, bringing the family together for some sort of shared creative experience like that is foundational for a family. I mean, when you think back about your childhood memories, sure, they're filled with lots of activities with your kid, with your friends, but those family activities come back, and it's usually the creative ones where you got together with your family and you either sang together or you did something together that had a purpose and was making something or bringing something about that didn't exist before.
Yeah, I think it even was Professor Anthony Esalen talks about that sometimes too, about this notion of family. I remember him remarking one time along this line about a family that he was acquainted with, and it was a big family, lots of children and cousins and all that. And they actually could they could form a musical ensemble, right? And they could perform. And how remarkable that was and how edifying that was. And they liked to play like bluegrass folk music and how much fun and, you know, good wholesome fun that was for the family. But how it built them up into a certain kind, you know, built them up into certain kind of people, right, by pursuing that. That's going to be different from passively listening. Here's my contrast. Passively, just to make a point, passively listening to, say, gangster rap, right? There's a whole different kind of thing that you're going to be doing to yourself pursuing one of those two different activities.
Yeah, and a similar analogy is, you know, having family game night where you break out the board games and you get together and play games versus playing video games and the
ooh, getting lost in Warcraft for 10 hours.
Exactly. You know, the passivity that's involved in a video game and the absorption and all of that.
Yes.
You know, you can tell the difference between that versus getting together and the family playing Monopoly. Although sometimes that's not always conducive for the spiritual life of the family either.
How cutthroat you are. No, that's one of the joys of having my daughter home from college for the summer is we've always been very big into playing board games as family and card games, you know, Uno, stuff like that. And we've been doing that quite a bit. And yeah, just really enjoying it. And it's funny because, you know, maybe I did something right as a parent, or maybe my wife did the right thing, or maybe this is just how she is. But yeah, my daughter, you know, when she was younger, you know, she, like other kids, wanted a Wii, wanted an Xbox and so on. And, well, we bought one for her. She worked and got the money herself to buy the other one. And, but she hardly ever used them. I mean, she used them sometimes, but like the Xbox is basically our gateway to Netflix.
right.
Yeah. And, So no, I agree wholeheartedly. Everything you guys are saying that's so important, especially that creative aspect. Or think about you're talking about music. You know, think about live music. We've been going to a lot of concerts this summer.
Yes.
And even like driving up to Chicago to go see U2 and the Joshua Tree tour and so on.
Oh yeah.
And even though you're still listening to the music someone else is producing, it's still a very communal thing with, you know, 60,000 people, and it's there's something really wonderful about that communal experience with your family, with these other fans, you know, enjoying this music.
I know in my one thing I tried in logic class I taught recently was I introduced three different games as ways to, again, sort of begin to habituate or orient them towards a different kind of way to use their intellect and think about things. And that was the three games I chose were chess, backgammon, and cribbage. Each in their own way, kind of involving a kind of strategy, but kind of fun. But also this, you have to think several steps ahead. And there's moving, but there's responding to other moves and all. And there was no, and my, one of the things I wanted to ensure was you didn't need electricity to play it. Right. And that they're kind of lifelong. They're kind of, if you can cultivate an interest in one or more of those, they're kind of a lifelong thing. And they're also the kind of games that you have to engage. They're best engaged, I should say. Not that you couldn't play them online with others, because I'm sure you can. But they're best played together, right, with someone else kind of face to face. And even though, like, chess, for example, isn't a real chatty game while you're playing, there is a certain kind of presence that you have with the other. I mean, you're very present to the other when you're playing chess across from one another. So those are ways in which, little ways in which we could think about how we might begin to sort of turn the ship.
Right. Our time is, we're coming up short on time here, but I did want to get to one other of Professor Tollefson's recommendations, and that is really honoring the concept of a Sabbath.
And
taking time away from the technology. You know, his recommendation is, you know, I think 1 hour a day, 1 day a week, and then 1 week a year of you know, putting the iPhone away, turning off the television, disconnecting Netflix for that amount of time, and just being present to each other as a family.
Mm-hmm. Or present to oneself. I mean, how often do people engage just in quiet, prayerful meditation? Again, as Catholics in our spiritual life, you know, go to church on Sunday, that's a communal thing, but we're also called to cultivate an individual prayer life or individual on a daily basis. And how often are we doing that? Or, you know, spending a whole hour in front of the Blessed Sacrament and so on.
Yeah.
So there's ways that, and again, that way you can at least also feel you're being spiritually productive, because you've got to always be productive, right?
And I know a lot,
right, yeah.
Yeah, I know a lot of people have begun to integrate a technological fast into Lent. So not only are they giving up candy and sweets, but they're also giving up Facebook.
And exactly.
And it's starting to become more of almost a communal type of thing that Catholics do. So we give up sweets and we give up Facebook for Lent.
Yeah, I'll make one quick recommendation too. Cardinal Sarah's book, The Power of Silence. That also could be a good antidote for us.
And that is all the time we have for the Catholic Cave for this week.
You're being very technocratic.
Well, you know.
Binding us to the clock.
Until next time, for Mark Tuttle, for Timothy O'Donnell, for Dr. Jason Eberle, I'm Kent Blanford. May God bless.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of the Catholic Cave. If you have a question or comment regarding this program, please address an email to Kent, K-E-N-T, at CatholicRadioIndy.org or call 317-870-8400. Replays of this program are available on podcast at CatholicRadioIndy.org. Just click on the programming tab, then go to podcasts of local programs.